Welcome, welcome, 100 times over to the 100th episode of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, a podcast for the centuries. I'm Tom.
I'm Eric.
I'm Brian.
And tonight we'll celebrate our 100th episode by speculating as to just what we'll be up to 100 episodes from now and beyond as we hit our future milestones. But before we look forward, let's dwell briefly in the past by presenting our usual Weekly Geekly, Geekly Weekly Roundup. Eric, since you introduced yourself first, why don't you go first? What have you been up to in the last week?
Fair enough. I have played an absurd amount of ping pong. Maybe that counts as a tabletop game. I don't really know whether or not we want to qualify that. It's on a table. It's called table tennis. I'm going to pretend it qualifies.
I was about to fire you from the show because you're being a jock, but...
That was a strong argument.
It's a tiny tennis game. I got to admit, it's probably not jockish. The most I'm going to get out of it is one strong wrist, which I probably already have.
You know, it's a game that lends itself to somebody with an already well-developed wrist, I will say.
Aside from that, it was really just a wonderful time of enjoying our favorite shows. New Game of Thrones, New Cosmos, happy all around. Both episodes were absolutely fantastic.
Agreed.
As a science teacher, I get really excited that I'm hearing the word tardigrade so often.
Water bear, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking about these things for years. I've been fascinated with them for at least a decade. And to hear people now going, like, texting me, going, water bears, and I'm like, tardigrades, and they're like, yeah, it's tardigrades, or I just hear people saying the word, I get excited.
Yeah, yeah. Explain briefly what a water bear is to our audience, in case they don't know.
They are a microscopic organism, and what's fascinating about them is we have found them just about on every place on Earth. We have found them on barks of trees and forests. We have found them at the polar ice caps. We have found them in oceans. We have found them in lakes, rivers, ponds, streams, on the human body, just about everywhere you look. And studies with them have basically proven them to be as near to immortal as we have found any living thing. They have survived volcanic-like temperatures. Obviously, freezing temperatures at the polar ice caps. The vacuum of space. They have survived in the vacuum of space. If that's not... If you don't nerd out on that a little bit, I don't know what'll do it for you in the realm of science.
It's pretty cool. Like, if our planet ever gets blown up, they could be distributed throughout the galaxy and maybe seed some other planet or something, right?
And they could, because they have been dehydrated for months, if not years. And when they were rehydrated, they were fine.
Someday, millennia from now, well, let's say millions of years from now, there will be a planet populated entirely by gigantic water bears.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be pretty fantastic. And it's funny because Neil deGrasse Tyson, the host, I think has been kind of an enthusiast as well. He did a little blip on an episode of Nova Science Now, which was his show prior to Cosmos, which I know probably not a lot of people followed because it wasn't mainstream the way that this show is. But he always seems to have a little blurb or blip about him. He's done it on his podcast. He's done it on Nova Science Now, and now he's done it on Cosmos. So I think he's an enthusiast.
Agreed. And we are a pretty mainstream show, as you said, but we're pretty enthusiastic too, I think.
Absolutely.
Does that conclude your update? Anything else?
That's it for me. I don't want to do any Game of Thrones spoilers just yet. It's a little too soon, so.
Okay. Arya dies. Arya dies. She's dead. Not really. Brian, over to you, man. What have you been up to?
It's been slow for me. I had a really fun game of Star Wars minis last week. Well, I actually had two fun games. I had a fun night of X-Wing minis last week. And since then, I've just been kind of chilling, watching a couple of Kickstarters unfold. The Super Dungeon Explorer Forgotten King Kickstarter, which I'm surprised you're not a little more excited about.
I am excited in theory about Super Dungeon Explorer, but I haven't purchased any of the sets yet. You actually do have the core set for that, do you not?
Yep, excellent Christmas gift, yep.
Yes. Actually, wait. Of course you have that. I forgot you got that for Christmas. Yes.
Uh-huh. This Kickstarter seems like a pretty good place to get involved. It looks like it's most of the pieces that you need to play the game and rules for pretty much everything that's already out. So if you have, you know, old pieces, you can upgrade them and all kinds of new stuff. And I think it's $100 to basically get in and on this huge collection, which is pretty much what just the box cost at retail. I mean, it's not a cheap game, but you know, that's nothing new.
And explain in very concisely what that game is for people that don't know, Brian.
Depending on I guess your background, it's either Descent or what's the other one? I can't think of it. The Dungeons and Dragons series, where it's a board game of characters, and it's almost like a tabletop board game, like. Where there's rules and facings and character sheets and measuring, but it's streamlined a lot faster. Their inspiration for the game is basically old 16-bit era role-playing games. So it's got that aesthetic to it and that kind of feel to it. It's cool, man. If you grew up, I guess, in the 90s playing games, I don't see how you can't love it.
Agreed, the golden era of role-playing games, in my opinion. Of course, that's totally based on my age, but...
Yeah. Being your age, it's a popular opinion.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So, some gaming, some Kickstarter obsessing, anything else?
That's it.
Okay, that brings it over to me, and I have the good fortune of having two co-hosts with whom I spend much of my leisure time, hence many of our updates will overlap. I will agree wholeheartedly with Eric that the shows we watched together were awesome. I will mention specifically with Cosmos that in addition to the mention of the Water Bears, which I can never remember by their proper name.
Tardigrade.
Yeah. Neil deGrasse Tyson brought up something that has been in my mind since like chemistry class in like 9th or 10th grade, maybe 10th grade, I don't even remember. That being neutrinos, these sort of smaller than atom particles that back when I was in like chemistry class, our teacher was obsessed with because they were like the hot new thing that everybody was interested in who was a scientist.
Yeah.
And many, 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 many years later, it's cool to see that she was somewhat vindicated in her enthusiasm because they are now a hot topic on the show Cosmos. So that was pretty cool. Geeked out on that a little. In addition, I will say that the X-Wing miniature gaming that I did with Brian at our normal Thursday night game night was awesome. We ended up just totally destroying each other's fleets, which is, I don't think we've ever done that before, have we, Brian?
I've never seen that before.
Yeah, neither have I. So that was a really cool session. And I'll remind the audience, X-Wing miniatures is a tabletop basically dogfighting game where you use X-Wings and TIE Fighters and various things and blow the crap out of each other. Pretty cool if you're looking for a Star Wars experience on the tabletop. Of course, I watched the Game of Thrones, and we can't talk about it. Arya's dead, Arya's dead, Arya's dead, she's dead, Arya's dead.
That's just cruel.
I know, it really is. And I think that's about it. A lot of overlap with my homies. Oh, I finished Uncharted The Golden Abyss for the PS Vita.
You know, that's the only one I haven't played, and it was the only reason I wanted a PS Vita. So I need your review. I have to have it.
I'll give you my brief review right now. It's free if you get a PS Vita and totally worth the price.
That means nothing to me. Totally worth free is we're still at I don't know.
That could go either way.
Right, yeah.
Story-wise, I felt it was a little weak compared to the Uncharted games, but still worthy of the name Uncharted. I think it was developed by another company. I might be wrong about that, but I thought that was the case, and I thought they did a pretty good job with it. So it's worth getting. If you're an Uncharted fan, you will definitely like it. It gives you everything you want from an Uncharted game. I will just add that I would like to see the Uncharted series kind of mothballed for a while, and for that same engine to be put to use for a fantasy or a sci-fi game.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
It'd be cool. So that's it. That's it for my update. And I guess that brings us to tonight's topic, which sort of relates to the weekly weekly updates. As we've reached our 100th episode, our century mark, which represents 2 years in the real world calendar, roughly, I thought that we would look forward into the future to our 200th episode, which will be in roughly 2016. And beyond that, to our 300th episode, which will be 2018. And if we want even beyond that, to our 300th episode, which will be in 2020. So each of our centuries, as I mentioned, takes 2 years. That's where we'll be in a short 6 years in the real world. Look ahead to those episodes to see what we will be discussing in our Geekly Weekly, Weekly Geekly updates then. And in so doing, gain some insight as to where we think the future is going to take us. So if that sounds like an idea to you guys, let's do it. Otherwise, the episode's over.
So we're starting with 2016, right?
Yeah, that's a century from now for us, yes.
There's a lot to cover. I don't know whether to start with kind of the geek aspect of it or nerd aspect of it, like what's going to be going on in the world of comic books, movies, video games, or the science technology aspect of it.
Well, narrow it down to what you would probably be presenting from any of those aspects in your weekly geekly update. How's that?
Fair enough. Well, I'm the science nerd. So I would start with the fact that by 2016, actually before 2016, in July of 2015, the New Horizons mission to Pluto will have arrived. For those who don't know, New Horizons is a NASA / ESA mission, European Space Agency mission, to send a probe to Pluto. Because officially we don't really have any information or photographs for that matter of Pluto. All we have is spectroscopy, so light imaging. And I don't know if you've seen the unenhanced Hubble telescope photos of Pluto. It looks like 10 pixels. It looks depressing. It looks like an 8-bit video game. So my assumption is by 2016 is when we're going to really start to see some of those enhanced photos come out. Not to mention we're going to get better images of the surrounding area in the Kuiper Belt. We'd get images of Pluto's 5 moons, for those who didn't know that Pluto even had any, because it is smaller than our moon, and yet it has 5 moons of its own. The most interesting part, though, and this is, I think, the part that excites me the most and what will probably take those few months, so it probably won't be till 2016 till we really see it, is footage of the fact that Pluto's largest moon, which is Charon, is actually more like a binary planet system. The moon doesn't orbit Pluto. Both Pluto and Charon orbit a point in space in between them. We have no footage of anything like that whatsoever. So that's kind of exciting to me. That would definitely make my update. Any news information, any photographs, anything that hit the NASA website, the ESA website, that would be all over mine. I'm giddy.
That's pretty intriguing. I am immediately prompted to ask two questions. One, will Pluto regain its planetary status as a result of our being taken with its beauty and its dance with this cosmic partner you claim it has? And two, won't we come to the realization that until every problem down to potholes and hangnails is fixed on Earth, we really shouldn't be spending money on space?
I'm going to say no and no. It won't regain true planetary status. And let's be clear on that. Even though it lost true planetary status as a whole, it never lost it entirely. It still gets a spectrum of terms thrown at it. Anywhere from dwarf planet or minor planet to Kuiper Belt object, which really takes it out of kind of any description whatsoever, aside from its location. I think we'll get a little clearer idea of what it is and where it is, but I do think that that probe is going to show us that its path is not entirely clear, and since that's one of the criteria for planethood, I don't see it earning that status back whatsoever. I do like the idea of calling these other objects minor or dwarf planets, though. I think it's a more accurate term. Because the reality is, when you pull up to Pluto in a spaceship, it's going to look like a planet.
What do you think of that, Brian? I'm sensing a subtle discrimination against Pluto. I'm sensing a second class citizenship evolving around these Kuiper Belt bodies. It's sort of condescending. I mean, they don't really get called planets in spite of the fact that they try their best to be planets. What do you think of that?
I think it's easy for me to accept that you can have kinds of planets, because I just think of it as like as a catch-all phrase. Like, there's, you know, gas planets and class M planets, and there's Pluto planets.
Yeah, I think the problem is that the term planet hasn't been, like, well-defined since, like, ancient Greece. I mean, the term planet literally is a Greek word that means the wanderers, and that's where we left it. We never gave it any updated description whatsoever. So I think that was the problem, is that there was no scientific description to go with this word that already existed back to ancient Greece. So I think it can be categorized a little bit better. I think there can be like a taxonomy to planets that we don't use currently. And maybe this mission will give us a little insight into that. By the way, this mission launched in 2006, to give you an idea of the distance here.
Wow. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, jeez.
I'm sorry, that's so hackneyed. I just can't resist pulling it out.
I totally get it.
People have no idea what you're talking about in 2016. They will have completely forgotten.
You're right. You're right about that.
Yeah, I don't think they knew in 2006 either, though.
So there you have it. There's a big headline from Eric's Geekly Weekly Roundup in 2016. Pluto, still not really a planet, still without a clear direction of where it's going, still can't claim to have cleared out its own orbit such that it is its exclusive orbit and not the province of a bunch of other orbiting space junk, which is, I think, another criteria. Time will tell. It's a century from now, so many things will have changed. Even our perception of things might have changed by then. We'll see. We'll see. So over to you, Brian. What do you have in the way of a projection for your Geekly Weekly Roundup when we hit our 200th episode in the year 2016?
I'm a little surprised that this wasn't Eric's first thing, too, but I'm proud of him for it not being, because
I already know what it is.
I'm probably still going to be bitching about episode 7.
Especially since episode 8 will be really close on the horizon in 2016, because they're considering doing them yearly.
It'll be like how you started to think about Hobbit when Smaug was just about to come out. Except I really don't think I'm going to like 7 as much as I did Hobbit, so.
So yeah. You are skeptical. You think you are going to have a negative Geekly Weekly related to episode 7.
Yeah, I think we'll be making fun of it for years. I think we'll be talking about it in 2020.
See, my concern with it is that we're going to be meh on it. And meh is a very descriptive industry term I'm going to use for this. And I say that because I don't see it being as bad as the current prequels. So I think we've been tainted so badly that we've suffered the worst, that we'll just go, all right, that was a little better.
This isn't really Weekly Geekly related, but I'll mention it now because it kind of affected how I was looking forward to it. And it affected things for the worse. You guys may or may not have been in on the Harrison Ford Ask Me Anything on Reddit this weekend.
Yeah, I had a look.
I actually really like the guy. He seems like a pretty, you know, intelligent, like, mature person. He's not like a Hollywood type or anything like that. So I was really interested in a lot of his questions. In his answers. But one of the things that he said that people kind of ran with was he talked about Han Solo was an important part of his life, as in past tense, as in he was done with Han Solo.
But he's been done with Han Solo for a long time. There was a long stretch after Return of the Jedi where when people asked him Star Wars related questions, or when there were Star Wars related, like, let's say, reunions or gatherings on TV shows, he wanted nothing to do with it. He wouldn't answer questions. He would tell people to move on. And I think part of that was the risk of being typecast.
I'm aware of that. I'm hoping, for my own selfish reasons, that if he had been involved in the
in the movie, it would have been too fresh on his mind to say past tense like that. But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, if we're going to talk movies, I have to throw this in there, that it is going to be a love-hate. I don't know if you looked at the potential movie lineup, but it's going to be a love-hate year for movies.
2016 is?
Yeah, it's going to be excessively love-hate. So we can let's just pretend that Star Wars ends up on the good side of things. I want to stay positive about it. I really do, considering all the pain and suffering we've been through.
Okay.
We're also going to get X-Men Apocalypse. We're going to get that Batman Superman movie, which I don't know whether to be happy about, only because of casting. By then, Captain America 3. So that should be good, considering how amazing the last one was. But then we're also getting these two movies, both of which I might add are sequels. And it's hard to say either of them without cringing. And if anyone has listened to any of the episodes I've been on thus far, they'll know how I feel. Prometheus 2 and Independence Day 2.
I'm going to have to take a moment. Hang on. Let me absorb that, because I was about to kind of be like, yes, Prometheus 2. And then you basically ruined my century, my literal century, not the figurative one we're using here, by telling me that they're making a sequel to that god-awful turd.
Oh, yeah. It's green lit. It's ready to rock. I mean, they're working on it. I'm horrified.
It's got to be better than After Earth.
Does it? Does it really have to be better? And I'll tell you why I say that, because when I left After Earth, I said, well, that sucked. And that was it. That was my total thought process on the movie. Like, that was relatively disappointing. To this day, Independence Day is still the worst movie ever made to me. And that includes, like, Plan 9 from Outer Space. I mean, everything. It's Ishtar. No, Independence Day is worse than Waterworld.
I left After Earth thinking, man, could have done better. It had a lot of potential, had a lot going for it. And I'm disappointed. I wish that movie had been better. I left Independence Day going, wow, they actually aggressed against me. They punched me in the face. I paid them money and they kicked me.
Yeah.
I felt that somebody had insulted and assaulted me after leaving that movie.
We have to do this episode because I did not hate that movie.
And you're not alone, Brian. You're not alone. I'll admit it. I have a lot of friends who admittedly don't love the movie, but like it. They think it's entertaining. They think it's a good time. And I loathe this movie.
It was a good popcorn flick.
One of the things Eric and I bonded over when we became friends was our mutual hatred for this movie. I'm not normally one that hates on movies. I can usually find good in most movies. But Independence Day went out of its way to be bad. I despise it. And the fact that there's a sequel makes me not even want to be around in 2016.
Yeah, it's rough. Both those movies for me are rough. Now, again, Prometheus 2, I'm upset maybe, but I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt and say maybe it can kind of pull itself up by its bootstraps and kind of deliver where the first one kind of didn't, and maybe even tie up some of the loose ends that the first one left. But Independence Day?
Irredeemable. I'm looking forward to Prometheus in spite of its flaws because I want to see where that story goes. There's nowhere the Independence story can go where I want to follow.
Yeah.
Okay, we're doing it. We're doing the Independence Day episode. Brian, you're going to unfortunately be up against the two of us on this one, but I would like to hear a well-reasoned argument for why it's not the worst movie ever made.
I mean, I have a friend who actually loves the movie, so maybe we can get Brian some backup. I don't
Should be entertaining either way.
Yeah.
God.
Oh, by the way, it has also been an ongoing Secret Santa joke for about the last 4 years that every year I get Independence Day in one format or another. Yeah.
That movie sucks so much. So, Brian, the Independence Day sequel might not make your Weekly Geekly as an atrocious thing you're gonna maintain?
Maybe we can do another discussion about whether it was... You guys will probably love it, and I'll hate it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what would have to happen to my brain between then and now.
Our roles will be reversed. You and I will be going in wanting to be reloaded with ammunition to hate on that franchise for another decade. And Brian will be going in expecting a decent popcorn movie, and he'll be where we were with the first Independence Day, and we'll be past the point of delirium with this horrible franchise.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So 2016. Right. I guess that brings it around to me at last. I am going to mention Episode 7, but I was going to mention that as a vehicle for what my real update was going to be. I will obviously be getting the home release version of Episode 7 by then on some media or not, and on some platform, meaning I might get the Blu-ray, or Blu-ray may just be defunct in my mind by then, and I might be getting a digital download. The real question, the interesting question is, on what platform will I be downloading it? Amazon? Apple? One of the consoles? Some as yet unidentified platform?
The industry leader, Super Mega Wii.
The Super Mega Wii might very well do a mid-cycle blitzkrieg and take over. Yes, you're right, good. Brian.
It's a good question. The only thing I would say is a guarantee is that it'll be a 4K download.
You think they'll release it in 4K format by then?
I think it will be, at minimum, a packed-in norm, if not an industry norm.
Ah, so I'll be bragging about how I'm watching it on my new 4K television.
Yeah. Kind of the way right now you get the DVD and the download and the Blu-ray all in one box. I think 4K is going to be kind of an essential pack-in by that point.
Okay, interesting. Now that makes me look forward to 2016, because of course I'm always ready to upgrade my TV. But I do that roughly every 5 years. So 2016, I will be due, I think. Should we wrap 2016? Anything else you guys want to touch on? I'd like to maybe get through a couple more centuries if we can. Any objections? 2016 going once, going twice, going three times, and fire up the flux capacitor. I hope that's not copyrighted. As we shoot to our 300th episode, which will air sometime in 2018. Now, we'll be old men by this time. I want to point this out.
This is true.
And as old men, we will surely have opinions. And as old men, we will surely not be shy about airing those opinions during our weekly geekly roundup. So in 2018, let's just keep the order going. Old Codger Eric, what will you be holding forth on in 2018?
All right, I got to go this one. I have to go this one. I'm going to bring it back to science, but I'm going to take into account that we're going to be old men, and this is probably going to be something that not only we want, but I think may apply to our fan base a little bit. And I hope I'm not offending anyone, but I have been to cons. I've been to science conventions. I've been to all of these sorts of organized events for our people. So I got to bring this one up. It's been announced already that it should be on the market by 2018, a drug to prevent and counteract obesity will be on the market. An official drug to counteract obesity. Not some herbal nonsense, not a infomercial drug, not something we're importing from China, an actual FDA-approved drug.
I was just going to ask, so we're talking an FDA-approved drug that's not going to reduce my insides to gray goo or something.
Correct. With the FDA, you don't know. I'm sure the side effects will be lengthy.
You'll want to kill yourself every day you wake up, but...
Right, but you'll be thin and want to kill yourself every time you want to wake up. Yeah, but through gene research, they have figured out essentially the way to turn off the fat insulator receptor gene. And again, by doing that, no more fat. Just over.
So I'm going to be one of these skinny guys that's like, no matter how much I eat, I just can't gain weight.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
I love the health benefits of it, but what frightens me most is, you mean we'll be able to squeeze like 100,000 geeks into a 50,000 square foot area now?
Well, the side effect of this, and what's being predicted with this by medical research, is that if you got those people who were overweight on this medication, and you used it as a preventative form of medication as well, you could expect the average human life in America to go up by about 12 years.
Wow. That's going to be...
Yeah, you're going to be packing those conventions.
No kidding. And not only that, we're going to be able to broadcast to like episode 15,000.
Yeah.
Wow, that's intriguing to me, actually. So I guess I, of course, wonder what happens to the excess calories if your body can't store them. Does that just mean extra large poops or something?
Well, no. The fat insulin receptor gene basically is what tells your body to store fat that you're or energy that you're not using. Mm-hmm. It's just going to flush right through you. So anything you're not using is just going right out the other end.
So I'm just going to have very dense poops.
Or really runny ones. I mean, I guess it depends on what you're eating, because when you don't absorb fats, it tends to not be dense. It's the other way around.
Oh. Wow. This should be interesting. Brian, are you going to partake when this drug comes out? I mean, you and I are pretty ripped already, but would you like to get a little more lean?
Yeah, I guess if that's the worst thing, if that's the worst side effect, I could live with it.
Man, not only am I going to do that, then I'm going to, like, just have a subscription to pizza at that point and just have it like brought to my house every day.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Like, forget for a minute what it'll do for our health. Forget for a minute what it might do to our life expectancy. Look what it'll do for the economy. Never mind all the people who are now buying this medication. And I'm sure the doctors who are just prescribing it ad nauseum, even if people need it or not. But now think of all the food people will be buying.
It could be bad for the world. We could be a nation of, like, zero consequences gluttons at that point.
Yeah, like, my first thought, like, was like, oh, I will never get fat again. Like, is it possible to make pizza just out of a giant croissant all day long? Can we do that? Like, that's got to be good, right?
Like I said, you just subscribe to pizza. It just, it never stops coming to your house.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. So our updates from that point on will always include how much of something we ate, and just the skinny guy's lament can't gain weight no matter what we do. It's amazing.
Yeah, I do think there will be like a dietary portion of the Weekly Geekly where we'll just be like, you won't believe what I ate this week.
So remember I was eating a turkey last week? Well, I upped it to two, and boy, I just can't gain any weight.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I was like 8 or 9 or something like that. I don't remember what the occasion was, but my parents took me to this, you know, my first nice restaurant, and they had dolphin on the menu. Now, I mean, we're adults. We know that that's just a mahi-mahi fish. Like, it's a dolphin fish.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to bring me, like, the whole dolphin. Like, you know, like 6 foot of fish. Well, mammal. So I was really disappointed when they brought me this tiny little plate, and I was just like, oh, it's not what I thought it was at all. If this goes through, I'm going to eat a whole dolphin.
Like a mammal dolphin.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Not the rebranded fish that they've tried over and over again to rebrand to make people not feel bad.
Right.
Because first it was spelled the same way. Then they were like, oh, we'll spell it with an F. Then they were like, we just got to call it something different.
I have to imagine that the dolphin mammal must taste something like beef.
Well, I don't think they have a drug that's going to, you know, bring it back from, you know, being on the endangered list, so, or threatened list, whichever one it's on right now, I guess, depending on the species. But, I mean, if they can make a, you know, you don't get fat drug, I'm sure they can up the dolphin population by then for you. Just for you.
Eric,
or you
can
take a trip to Japan.
I got two words for you. Farm-raised.
Farm-raised dolphin.
Yep. They cuddle with you and nuzzle your face right before you kill them and eat them.
Yeah.
Just like a cow.
Yeah. Dolphin back ribs.
Oh, God. I love how the invention of this drug makes us just like completely like unfeeling gluttons for any creature that walks or swims.
Yeah, isn't there a vegetarian and a vegan on this panel?
For some reason, I think that pill takes away all incentive. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what I eat anymore, unless I actually don't want to like kill mammals en masse to feed my never-ending appetite. We'll see. We'll see what comes of this, but very interesting 2018 leadoff kind of sets the tone for that year, I think. So over to you, Brian. In between munching on your fifth or sixth rack of dolphin ribs, what will you be updating us with in your Weekly Geekly in 2018?
I think we will be seeing the new format like actually come to fruition, holo cubes or whatever's going to replace Blu-ray. I think we will be seeing that on the bleeding edge, people buying it, people getting excited about it. So I'm going to go with the tried and true, the PlayStation 9's Hollow Cubes.
The PlayStation 9, is that what they were before the PS3 came out or PS2 came out? They were kind of showing these future commercials about the PlayStation 9?
Yeah. It was a PlayStation 2, I think.
Right.
And so people were wearing it like Google Glass and like plugging. It looked like a cube of Post-it notes. Just something about that size. My new game.
You know, I'm still waiting for the day I can plug my Game Boy into my friend Robot's head and play a game against him. I don't know if you remember that commercial.
I don't.
No, the original Game Boy commercial. He was holding the Game Boy, and it showed how you could link up with a friend, and he takes the link cable and plugs it in. He has, like, a robot he's playing against, and he plugs it into his head.
Oh, wow. He plugs it into that 80s robot, Jinx, from Space Camp.
Oh, wow. I hadn't even thought of that one, but yeah.
Who had an annoying voice that I won't try to do an impression of right now?
I was really tempted.
Yeah,
I shouldn't do it.
Let's spare our audience that one. We'll do that post show for our own entertainment. But Ryan, so you're thinking a solid state, cool looking cube is the next gen in media?
It'll probably just be Green Ray. I'll go on the record as actually suspecting something like that. But I like to think with my dolphin dinner, I'll be enjoying hollow technology of some kind.
Yeah, sounds cool. Do you think that physical media will persist, or do you think we'll go all digital by then?
No, I think physical will hold on a little while longer. I don't think it's gone yet.
Interesting. Okay, I'll be curious to see that. I'm more really just obsessed with being, like, really thin in 2018 now, so this other technology is, like, a distant second at this point. Okay, I guess I'll hazard a guess as to what I will be updating our audience on in 2018. I think by 2018, what I broadcast won't be as important as from where I broadcast, which will be my new permanent home, very, very close to the Disney parks, where I will be constantly so that I can essentially live in Star Wars land and Avatar land, both of which, based on zero evidence, I expect we'll be open in some capacity by then in the Disney World theme park in not so nearby Orlando, Florida. I have a feeling that if I can actually go eat lunch at a cantina, I will want to do that like every single day.
Yeah, I got to agree with you on that one. And I don't think 2018 is too far off. They tend to go on like a 2-year announcement to opening day cycle. So if those two parks are to be in existence by 2018, I mean, they still got 2 years to announce them as far as I know.
It would be pretty awesome. I mean, couple that with the fact that by then the expanded Harry Potter presence at Universal will be fully fleshed out. And suddenly, like, being at the theme parks all the time is a lot more appealing. Couple that with the fact that we are going to have train service between our area here in South Florida and the theme park area in Orlando. And I'm going to be there all the time, man. Now, I'll probably be doing most of my broadcasts from up there.
You know what, Tom? On this subject, let me ask you for one more prediction. As Islands of Adventure, Universal Studios' contract with Marvel runs out, since it will be transferring to Disney, what takes over the Marvel Island at Islands of Adventure?
I predict that during my weekly Geekly update, and I talk about my jaunt over to Islands of Adventure after going to Star Wars and Avatar Land and Disney, that I will tell you that the Marvel stuff is still there because it's a symbiotic relationship. Disney can focus on developing their other Marvel properties while letting Universal continue to pay them royalties to continue to use their characters in their parks. As much as I would rather be going to Star Trek Land, I think that's what's going to happen.
That was my dream as well, but, you know, no guarantees.
What do you think about that, Brian? Do you think that Universal will keep the Marvel attractions in their parks, or will they replace it with something cool like Star Trek Land?
No, I think Universal will replace it.
Really?
I don't think they're a huge fan of paying those royalties, and they do such a terrible job with them that I think it won't even be offered. Unless there's some, like, you know, automatic renewal clause, I don't think they have a chance.
You don't like the implementation of the marble attractions at Universal at IOA?
Like them? Yes. But there is like them and like them Disney level.
So you think the properties are kind of squandered in Universal's hands to a certain extent?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. What do they do with Captain America there? Like, he leads the parade down the street once an hour or something like that?
Good point, yes.
There's a cardboard cutout of him.
So, probably the biggest single hero right now. And there's, like, a $35 standee that you can pose with.
Good point. I think the problem is the game has been stepped up in theme parks since that was built in the 90s or whatever, or the late 80s. So that all that capital investment is, like, stuck in 90s technology. And I think either a ripping out and reconstitution on Disney property or a... Yeah, I mean, I guess that's really the only way you're going to see the Marvel stuff brought up to date, so to speak, right?
I would love to believe that, but I will point out... Well, I will ask instead, what did they update when they updated last?
They updated Spider-Man. They made it look nicer.
They updated Storm.
They redid the footage. That's all they did on the Spider-Man one. They just prettied up the footage.
You were saying they updated Storm, Brian?
Do you remember how they updated Storm?
No, how?
It's the teacups, like a 50-year-old ride.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
You remember Storm Cyclotron or whatever it's called?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
I'm not even joking. It's the teacups. It's a carnival ride. They just park there.
Lame.
If but, that's their idea of catching up, I don't think they have a chance.
And that's my problem exactly with the Marvel Land as it is right now, is that with the exception of Spider-Man, which is dated at this point, even though they polished it up, it's still kind of dated. There's nothing there that just can't be easily rebranded. Like, nothing is so Marvel-specific. Like, even the Hulk, that roller coaster, if you were going to turn it into Star Trek, you could just paint that thing like a shuttlecraft. And call it the Shuttlecraft Experience, and it would be fine.
Yeah, I'm holding out for a Star Trek experience. I don't, for some reason, Star Trek historically has not screamed adventure and thrills to me, but with the new guy directing the movies, that's quickly changing. So good work. But with that said, I think we should probably slingshot around the sun at warp speed and fast forward to another era, unless you've got anything else to update us on in 2018. Going once, going twice, going three times, warp factor 9, around the sun. We are now in 2020. Wow, the distant future. I mean, this is like almost beyond imagination at this point. 2020, whoever thought we would reach that? This is like spaceships, flying cars, robot assistants, right? Right?
Yeah, we're getting there.
Well, let's just assume we're there, Eric, in that case, and hit me, man. What are you talking about? It's your weekly Geekly update, our 400th episode in the year 2020, man. I want to hear what your update is.
All right, I'll admit, I'm hesitant to say we will definitely be there, flying cars, all that nonsense, because if I'm not mistaken, we're a year away from Back to the Future 2's predictions, and it's looking nothing like that. But given the fact that we're 6 years from 2020, there is one that's very likely. And that is, especially for our computer nerds and geeks out there, that Moore's Law, and if you're not familiar with Moore's Law, I'll explain it in a minute, is rapidly approaching the point where a home computer, a $1,000 home computer, would have the same ability and processing power as the human brain. And we should hit that point right about at 2020. So for those who don't know, Moore's Law is basically, the guy's name was Gordon Moore. And basically what he said was that computer power, processing power, the number of transistors at the time and integrated circuits doubles every 2 years. So it doubles every 2 years. And this has been true, we have found out, for every bit of technology that we've experienced since. Like digital cameras, for example, double their pixel count about every 2 years. So that being said, if that continues, and there's no reason why it shouldn't, yeah, a 2020, you know, storefront $1,000 computer should be about as powerful as your brain.
Well, if we're talking as powerful as my brain, then I weep for the future of humanity. But that is intriguing. As somebody who makes his money using computers, I, of course, always welcome advances in that field. And I think Moore's Law has remained pretty constant, even using silicon-based computers and using, I guess, binary state computers. And we're not even talking about super-duper gee-whiz developments like quantum computing that take advantage of, and I only have a very shallow understanding of this, the sort of multi-state possibilities that take place at the quantum level that defy the sort of physics that we are used to in our day-to-day existence, such that you can, whereas data can now be represented as on and off, on and off, on and off, you now have, I think, even simultaneous states that can, taken in combination, represent data. So think about that. If your choices were flipping a coin a certain number of times and counting the heads and tails to reach a conclusion, now your choices are to count every state the coin is in during the flip, maybe. And from that, think about the amount of data you could collect in that coin flip. That's as good an analogy as I, a layman, can come up with.
And it gives us kind of hope and fear of two things. And I don't fear the whole AI thing. I'm not like a, you know, paranoid about Skynet or anything like that. I am hopeful for AI. I think it's, you know, pretty exciting stuff. My fear is, again, like you said, if this is going to be as powerful as my brain, the only difference between now and then is that I'm going to have a computer with Netflix capabilities who will not be able to pick a movie for me.
Well, at least it'll hate the same movies as you. It will never add Independence Day to your queue.
Right.
Unless it grows to hate you too, and then it'll just throw it in there in the middle of something you actually do like.
It'll splice the stream into whatever you're watching to screw with you.
Yeah, and if it's actually anything like our brains, it's going to be full of hate and loathing, so.
Brian, what do you think about all this? First of all, what do you think about my completely uninformed attempt to liken the various states in a coin flip to quantum computing?
I immediately thought it was going from a flip a coin to a D20, so I think yours is much more accurate than that.
I confused myself, so it has to be somewhat accurate. I'll ask my future computer what it thinks. But, yeah, what do you think, man? I mean, is this, are we going to see the continued doubling every 2 years, maybe even an acceleration?
I would say at least doubling or an acceleration. I don't think quantum computing is going to slow it down, but it might actually change the law. Doubling, at least for that step, sounds a little on the pessimistic side.
So we could be on the cusp of an even faster faster rate of doubling of computing power in 2020. But I think I'm with Eric in that on the current path, we're going to get the human capacity computer by then. For home use, we're talking, right? Like your average PC.
Yeah. We'll probably achieve that, you know, prior if it hasn't already happened and they're just not telling us. But, you know, I try not to play conspiracy theorist. But I'm saying laboratory-based, I'm sure there are some things that have come close. We're talking over-the-counter $1,000 computer, $1,500 computer. Yeah. You're going to have a computer brain in your house.
Man, Diablo 7 is going to be so cool. Not really. It's still going to be Diablo. The loot's going to be even more difficult to come by.
Now, I will say, that said, from a camera or digital camera standpoint, in comparison to the human eye, we won't even come close. We won't even be close.
Meaning that technology will not have advanced or we will have surpassed the eye? What do you mean?
Well, I'm saying if you take the number of megapixels that a digital camera can support and you multiply that by the two and the two and the two, by the time you get to 2020, it still wouldn't even come close to the capability or the pixel count, if you will, of the human eye.
Well, that's because mere humans designed a camera while... Oh, I'm not going to go anywhere with that. We watch Cosmos. Let's leave it at that. All right, Brian. So it's 2020. You're sitting next to your just as smart as you computer, getting ready to give us your update. What's your update consist of?
I think we're beating this topic up a little bit, but it's a natural beating it up, so I guess that's all right. I completely think we'll be 3D printing our dolphins for dinner.
3D printing out of, like, food medium or something?
Yeah, they'll be, like, spools of protein or something like that. Like,
ah, 2020. I see. Eric, you're a vegetarian, as I am vegan. Would you object to a synthesized protein that we grow in the lab? Now you can eat meat, but it doesn't really come from an animal anymore.
You know, I've thought about that a lot, and I think if we were generations enough away from the source where we literally were doing no harm whatsoever, and it was literally just synthetic in a lab, yeah, I'd eat it.
I mean, all they'd have to do is take a sample from some living animal without killing it, and then they could grow the meat from there. You could finally have that gigantic rack of ribs from the Flintstones that you always wanted.
That's right.
So, Brian, first thing up, you're going to 3D print dolphin ribs?
I don't know. I'm not really sure.
I think I'm going to 3D print, like, a pterodactyl.
Like a live one?
Yeah.
Not smothered in barbecue sauce.
No, he's going to be my pet. Then I will print out one to eat after that.
Now, could you print one that talks, but only says, it's a living?
Well, yeah, by then, a computer that could do that much that would be his brain would be like $5. So, yeah, totally.
Yeah, sure.
That's pretty cool. So you're pretty bullish on 3D printing being a pretty standard feature in a lot of homes in the future, Brian.
Yeah, I really think that 3D printing is going to just really change the world by then. I think maybe a little early. I'm not ready to go by 2018, but yeah.
So by 2020, though, you're thinking it's a possibility. Do you think we're going to get to the point where, like, I buy a product on Amazon and what I really do is download it and print it at home?
Yes.
Okay. Eric, do you concur?
I think we'll be there by then. I don't think it will be for all products, but I think we'll start to see that integration.
And can you see us, both of you see us getting there eventually, though? Brian clearly can. Eric?
I do. And again, I mean, where I see it starting is almost like in a parts-based medium, starting with engineering and so on. If I need a new part for my dishwasher for a repair, it'll just be printed up.
Yeah, I can see a lot of sort of fix-it-at-home stuff maybe leading the way. Things that aren't super sophisticated, but later on...
It'll get there. It's definitely going to get there.
I agree. I mean, I can't wait to 3D print my kids and grandkids' presents for them. I will literally be Santa Claus. I will set up a workshop. Unfortunately, I'll have to wear padding in my Santa suit because I won't be able to be fat thanks to the pill that's coming out in 2016. But, ho, 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 kiddies, Santa's going to make you all the toys you want, which they'll think is lame because they can make them with their own 3D printers. But still, I'll be entertained. No? Nobody shares my whimsical view of the 3D printing future?
I was just thinking what abbreviation we could use for the 3D printer to make it an elf.
Yeah. You're going to have to come up with something like that. Not only that, like, they're just going to have to come up with new, like, stories and fairy tales and nursery rhymes, carols that all are, like, you know, he digitally sent the data with care.
Oh, I see. So we're going to redo Twas the Night Before Christmas, but with 3D printing introduced.
Right.
If we could remember this until the Yule season rolls around this year, I think we should come up with our own Christmas carols revolving around that sort of thing. And our own Christmas poems or whatever they are. Is that a poem? What is that, Brian? You're the man of literature.
A carol?
Sure. Twas the Night Before Christmas. We'll do that. Twas the 3D printer before Christmas.
Not a creature was stirring except for Tom's pterodactyl.
Thank you for remembering him. Terry thanks you. All right. So, Brian, still very optimistic about the future of 3D printing, as am I every time I talk to him. Eric, we already know from our previous episode and attending the Science Con, is very up on that technology, too.
Oh, absolutely.
I, however, will be operating in a different mode come 2020. I will probably still have a 3D printer for when I need it. But I will be regaling audiences come 2020 with tales from the virtual world. I will by then have a respectable VR rig and be spending most of my time not in this world. So if I need to still program for my job, I will do so from on the surface of some alien planet or some distant locale. I will podcast from some beach or mountaintop. I will hang out with my friends, slaying dragons and space aliens and all sorts of things. I will spend most of my time in virtual reality. What do you guys think of that?
I think you're going to be out of a job.
Thanks.
One, because you're going to be lost in virtual reality. And two, if we've got computers that are as advanced as the human brain, I'm pretty sure they're going to do a lot of the programming for themselves.
I hope so, actually. I do hope so. Yeah. I am pessimistic about that for a number of reasons, but I hope so. And not because the computer student couldn't do the programming, but because there is an old saying or axiom or whatever you want in computing, and I think also in mathematics and also in a bunch of other fields, that garbage in leads to garbage out. And unfortunately, no matter how sophisticated the computer, the dimwit coming up for the requirements for what the computer is supposed to do has to be nimble of mind enough to give the computer adequate instructions. And I'm going to tell you right now, that is a painfully iterative process today.
Now, I agree with you completely. And I'm not saying that everyone will be out of job. I'm just saying that in your field, jobs are going to become more limited.
I hope so. I can see a space for myself. I'm somebody who can speak. I'm somebody who can program. I think I'd be the perfect middleman translating the dim-witted business requirements of dim-witted business people into instructions for the computer.
Yeah, that makes sense. Plus, you're not a basement troll, so that's nice too, because you might have to talk to people if you're actually in that limited group.
Trust me, I have to do it on a daily basis now, and so far I've been able to manage, so I think I'll be able to manage it by then. But like I said, it won't matter because my virtual avatar will be talking to them and will be talking to their virtual avatars. Brian, what do you think of this? Business, pleasure, everything conducted in virtual reality as soon as 2020.
Optimistic? Not everything. I think you'll have the option for a lot of stuff. I think it'll be almost like video chatting right now. I would also like to point out that you can thank my spools of protein for your limitless time in there with no need to unhook.
Right. I'll have a spool like dispensing meat into one end of me and a spool on the other end spooling my output back onto a spool. Or a spooler on the other end basically turning my waste back into reusable protein, right?
I was going halfway, but all right.
Well, I don't want to have to unplug to go to the bathroom.
Diapers, I mean.
Oh, gross. I don't want to do that. I don't want it to all be automated.
Much better have something spooling you.
Yeah. Think about it. Eric, what do you think about this? I'm digging this.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around it at the moment. I don't know.
Said rap like schooling. I did. That's good.
Yeah, I went there.
Well, I'm not trying to be gross, but you got to be practical. If a man wants to spend a long time in virtual reality, the inconveniences of the real world need to be mitigated, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So I propose that if we've got a source of infinite sustenance input, we need a complementary means of removing the necessary output that must result from biological processes, which you as a man of science must understand will still be a reality in 2020.
How long are you planning to spend in this world, though? I mean, is it so long that you can't use the restroom, or is it so long that you don't want to get up to change your diaper?
I mean, it depends. In my new role as a middleman between dumb business people and computers, I might want to live in a virtual space with my computers so I can talk to their avatars. You know what I mean? I might need to do this for work. It's not just play.
Well, maybe by then you can just upload your brain and your physical body can just like lay in a bed with a colostomy bag and you'll be all set.
Wait a minute. I could just upload a copy of my brain. It can do all the work and then I can do whatever I want.
Like lay in bed with a colostomy bag.
Which I would do, right, while conscious, of course.
Yeah.
Yes, I like it. But, you know, In all seriousness, I know I'm a little optimistic in assuming that in 2020 we're going to have virtual reality to that degree. I do expect that something like the successor or maybe even the actual Oculus Rift and similar products will be fairly widely adopted by then and will be maybe a couple decades removed from virtual reality being an irresistibly compelling place. Do you guys concur? We'll kind of be at the dawn of that age in 2020, maybe?
I think so.
Yeah.
Cool. So poop spooling aside.
Right, without the poop spooling.
I would very much like to have the three of us sitting in some kind of virtual space in a virtual reality of some sort, conducting our podcast with an open audience hall for anybody that would care to attend.
Yeah, but then we would virtually see our audience, and that might be upsetting.
We would see optimized versions, and we could apply our own filter. So if we didn't like what we could see, we could replace everybody with bunnies.
I like bunnies.
Everybody likes bunnies. Brian likes to eat bunnies.
With our 2020 computers, we could even get some AI to show up. We don't even need you humans to listen to this crap.
That's a good point, Eric. You're good.
Jinx put Max in space.
Oh, damn it. I didn't mean to. I accidentally segued into the Jinx voice. Oh, man. So 2020, that'll be episode 400. And we're only at 100, so that seems like a long time off, but it'll be here before you know it. Let me ask you this, guys, rather than going another iteration forward. How long do you see us, assuming our willingness persists and we're having fun with it, et cetera, podcasting? At what point is podcasting going to transform into something else or become no longer viable or what have you?
Wait, it's viable?
Define viable.
Yeah. Was...
Okay. Theoretically, people could download this recording of our voices and listen to it at their leisure. At what point does that cease to be even a remote possibility, even the remote possibility that it is today?
I don't think it ever becomes remote. Maybe the format itself becomes remote, but recording human experience, even as silly as what we think we might be doing compared to something, you know, profound, will never really be remote. I mean, it's what humans do.
The possibility of somebody picking our podcast to listen to out of all of the hundreds and thousands on offer is remote, though.
Well, that's remote right now.
Right. That will continue to be remote, but no more remote in the future, you're saying.
Right.
You don't think that some new kind of delivery method that we can't think of yet, some audiovisual presentation, won't become the norm in the future? Again, some VR thing led by avatars?
Hit me, Trinity.
I mean, again, the only possibility is if you could 3D image record yourself and then people could use the VR headset to watch it kind of like in a pseudo video podcast, but where they're in the room or attending a conference or watching a show on stage.
I see. So you've just got basically YouTube and VR at that point.
Yeah, basically.
I would not be so surprised if experiences were not downloadable.
Explain.
If you could just not, like, listen to this stream of ones and zeros and then remember having listened to a podcast or something.
Oh, direct implantation, like in, like Total Recall and that sort of thing?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, and there have been a few movies that have hit on that. I mean, with The Matrix, they're just, you know, pumping lessons into his head. Or with, what was that movie? Strange Days, where they could put on that headset and relive somebody else's memories.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah.
Why would you ever leave the house? You could just experience everyone's memories at that point.
I have to say it again. I know I'm always devil's advocate on this one, and I'm always the one who has to bring it out. But if you're going to relive a memory, porn?
Tom, what sort of memories you've been downloading? Just porn, but you never really had the sex. Could have fooled me.
You will not need that diet pill if this technology exists, because I will just watch the video of me eating 10 turkeys, which would also be vegan, I might add.
Or I will just keep implanting delusions into my mind that I am fit and thin, even though I am Jabba the Hutt-like in my proportions. And therefore, I will never really be able to grasp the reality that I am fat.
Yeah, you got a thin avatar.
Every, like, nanosecond, the memory of my ripped body that never was, it will just be ported back into my brain.
Yeah, there were no fat Navi in the movie.
That's true. That's very true. We've got, like, 7 ways to skin this, I was going to say cat, but I'll say fat in the future.
Yeah.
All coming your way in Only a few years. Amazing. But guess what else is coming your way, audience? More quality episodes of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. And since we know you don't want to miss a one, I highly recommend that you subscribe to us on iTunes or through whatever podcatching software you happen to use. Write us a favorable review, rate us a maximum number of stars or navis or whatever unit is used in that particular podcatcher software, etc. And if you prefer a streaming solution, I can think of no better solution than Stitcher.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, find us on Google Plus, and join our relatively secret society group on Facebook.
Check out our website at nerdstravaganza.com or drop us a line at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And with all that said, we will see you guys next episode and
in the future.